Okay, now we can go ahead and get started. Okay, so this is CDS 110 and also CDS 101. So if you're not in the right place, and if you didn't get handouts from outside, now would be a good time to go to the table outside and grab some handouts, because we'll be referring to them during the lecture. Okay, so what I want to do in this lecture is to first start by giving you an overview of this class, including the course structure administration. We'll start with that, and then we're going to dive into the material. And so what I want to do in this first lecture is really at the very introductory part, obviously. I want to define what feedback systems are, which is the topic of the class, and some of the main features of feedback systems, and then describe what control systems are, and some of the principal and primary principles of feedback. The reading we'll talk about in a little bit later. For people just coming in, if you didn't get handouts, there are handouts out on the table outside, and you will want to get some before you sit down. Okay, so let me start with course administration. So you should all have a course syllabus. It's a single sheet that says fall 2006 at the top of it with my name. So this is two classes sitting on top of one another, CDS 101 and CDS 110. This Monday lecture and the Friday lecture are shared lectures between those two classes. The Wednesday lecture is a separate lecture only for CDS 110, so the number of units are different. If you are not sure which of these two you want to take, the way to think about CDS 101 versus 110 is CDS 101 is the principles and tools of feedback systems. CDS 110 adds on to that a lot of the analytical work and some of the technical details. If you're in one of the engineering majors, likely you want to take CDS 110. That's what's required, for example, for MEs and EEs. If you are in the sciences and you're really just trying to get an introduction to the topic, then you probably want to take CDS 101. And I'll talk a little bit more as we go through about some things that are different between the two. Lectures and recitations, so they're lectures on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Again, CDS 110 on Wednesday, CDS 110 and 101 on Monday, Friday. They'll all be here. We will also have recitation sections. Those won't start until next week, so we will pass out some scheduling sheets on Wednesday to get those set up in the recitations. The TAs will lead them, and they'll go through some of the technical details from the lecture and answer questions and kind of get you oriented toward the homeworks. We also have office hours for you to use as you're doing the homeworks. There are two sets of office hours. Homeworks will come out every Monday, the first one you already have. They're always due the following Monday. The office hours are tuned to that. For those of you who are on the ball and get started early, there are office hours on Fridays from 3 to 4, and they will be over in the Steel building. And on the Friday office hours, they're when? Where? 110 Steel. There are also office hours on Sundays from 6 to 8, for those of you who don't get started quite so early. And those are also in Steel, but they'll be in the CDS library, which has a little bit more room. So the syllabus is not quite correct, but the course webpage has that correctly on it. The grading in this class is heavily homework-based. If you didn't get copies of the handouts, there's some handouts on the outside table you should grab before you sit down. So homework will count for 50% of your grade. There'll be a homework set every week. There are 8 total on the table outside, sorry. There are 8 of them total. They're always due on Mondays, 5 o'clock, so you can turn them in class if you want. You can turn them into the box that we'll set up outside my office if you want. No late homework without prior permission. So if you can't turn your homework in by Monday at 5 p.m., there better be an email to me, the instructor, not the TA, saying, I'm not going to be able to turn it in. Can I get an extension? If I don't get an email from you and say, yes, it's okay, then it's due at 5 p.m. Typically, first time you ask for an extension, I'm usually pretty easy about it. But if you start asking for more than one, it's like, hey, you know, the material is very clocked to the homeworks. And so if you're starting to fall behind, there's a problem. So please do turn the homework in on time. Usually if you do ask for an extension, I'm not likely to give you more than a couple of days. The TAs have to grade that homework, and it's very important for them to be able to schedule their time. And we try and get it back to you a week after you turn it in. It's obviously a pretty big class, and so the TAs have a lot of work to do, so we need to give them the time to do that. So the homework is 50% of your grade. There'll be a midterm and a final. Midterm is typically 3 hours, open book, take home. Final, typically 3 hours, open book, take home. And the midterm and final count 20% and 30% for your grade. So that's how the grading works in this class. Homework policy I already covered. The course text is a book that is now pretty much complete. by myself and Carl Astrom. It's available in the bookstore. It looks like this. All of the reading, everything that you need will come out of this book. There's also a wiki that goes along with this that's on the web. I'll point to it a little bit later. That has additional problems, frequently asked questions, other things that go along with the book. And so that's the primary reference for the course. There are some other references that we've put up on the web page if you want additional references or other things to look at. And I point out a couple of other books. Most of them are on reserve in the Sherman Fairchild Library. The course homepage, the URL is listed here. Is it? Oh my God, the URL is not listed here. Where? I don't see it. Course text, software. I don't see anything that actually says CDS 101. Oh, okay, fine. Good enough. So, at that website, you should find everything you need for the class. I will hand out at every lecture a copy of any lecture notes, like if I'm going to, especially if I'm doing PowerPoint, but even if I'm not, so that you'll have something. And when I go on PowerPoint, as you'll see, I go reasonably fast, so you'll pick up those notes. But I won't hand out anything else. So homework sets, I'm not going to hand out homework sets. They'll be available on the web page. Additional notes, if you miss the lecture, you'll find the lecture notes up there. We keep a pretty up-to-date website with everything that you should need there. So hopefully that will work in terms of getting you all of the information you need. Software for the class will make heavy use of MATLAB. If you've never used MATLAB before, I would encourage you to go and get it installed on your local machine if you're going to use it on your local machine, or get to an IMSS computer and make sure that you can at least run MATLAB. There should be enough site licenses on MATLAB for the class to all be doing things simultaneously, which tends to happen on Sunday nights. If there is a problem, then one of the valid excuses for asking for an extension on the homework is we ran out of licenses. But that's happened before. This class is not as big as the biggest class we've taught, so my guess is it shouldn't happen. All right. If it does happen, we'll get IMSS to kick up the number of site licenses that we have. That'll be the only software that you need for the class, so there are various things that we've put toolboxes and other things in MATLAB. You're welcome to use other software packages if you want to use Mathematica and other things. But of course, and we'll say this in the homework, you need to turn in, you know, anytime when you're using Mathematica, do a derivation or something like that, you need to turn in a copy of that derivation. The course outline I'll go through a little bit later. I'm going to do these things in a second. The one other thing that I haven't yet talked about is the collaboration policy. So I'll talk about the honor system in a little bit more detail on Wednesday, because a lot of the first-year graduate students in particular will be here for the Wednesday class. So I'm not going to do a detailed introduction on the honor system, but the collaboration policy is a relatively standard one. You are encouraged to collaborate on the homeworks. However, everything that you turn in should be your own work, and so that means that you've written up the answers. They reflect your understanding of the problems. All MATLAB needs to be done individually. All right, so you're not allowed to take somebody else's MATLAB script and use that to generate your answers. You need, because part of what we try to teach you in the class is how to use MATLAB to solve the sorts of problems we're doing, and so you need to do all the MATLAB on your own. No collaboration on the midterm and final, obviously, but plenty of collaboration on the homeworks. You can talk to the TAs. You're not allowed to use previous copies of solutions from the homework sets. So you can't go out and, you know, sort of see whether Google has cached all of the previous homework sets and use those. Right? Again, the point is to learn the material and demonstrate your understanding of the material. All right. So I'll talk about this stuff in a second. That's the baseline things that are on the syllabus. Questions on any of this? No? Okay, a couple of other things about the course that are a little unusual. One is that you have the option, if you wish, of doing a course project. I will talk about the course project in more detail on Wednesday. So the course project, the basic idea is if you'd like to sort of learn some about the implementation of control systems, then you can do the course project. The course project will involve implementing things on ALICE, our DARPA Grand Challenge vehicle, so learning to get ALICE to drive itself around. And again, I'll talk more about that on Wednesday. So the course project is only available for people in CDS 110 as opposed to 101, and so we'll talk more about that on Wednesday. We're going to pass a sign-up sheet around, and the reason to pass this around, so if we can hand those down to Rosemary, is so that we can get an accurate mailing list. We use the mailing list if there's a problem on the homework or something else we need to let everybody know about. You should sign up for this mailing list, even if you are auditing the course or otherwise just sitting in. Sometimes the registrar's list gets behind, and so I prefer to have a separate email list and make sure that I get everybody. So please sign up for this so that we can get your name down and onto the email list, and I'll do that later today. As you see from the microphone, we record all of the lectures. So if you can't make it to the lecture, you're probably not here and you're listening to this on tape. But if you can't make it to a lecture at some point, we will post on the website MP3s for that lecture, and they go along more or less with what's in the slides. And so between the whatever I present or my lecture notes, which you'll also have available, and the MP3s, you can do that. That also tends to cut down the crowding in the room, as some people decide that after lunch they want to do something different. I'm okay with you not coming to class. All I care is that you learn the material. If the best way for you to learn the material is come and listen to me and ask questions and be interactive, fine. If the best way for you to do it is to read the book and do it that way, fine. What I have found, my experience, is that people who don't come to the class don't do as well in the course. Right? What the correlation is, I can't exactly tell you, but that's just been my experience. Okay? We're not doing anything tracking attendance or anything else, but that's been my experience. We do try and keep track of the course load. As you know, this class is united at 9 units. If you've talked to anybody, you've probably already found out that it is an under-united class, typically. So one of the things we will ask you to do, and we've already asked it on the first homework set, is as you do the homework set, when you turn it in, please write the number of hours that you spent on the homework and any reading on the back of the first page of your homework set. We actually put that into the spreadsheet when we record the grades. We keep track of how much the homeworks are. We know how much the homeworks took from previous classes when we taught it, and we actually try and modulate the homework to get that down to the sort of nominal 9 units. It's a self-reported number, but it's very helpful for us knowing whether we're kind of kicking up a little bit too high, and it varies year to year. So we do try and keep track of that. And that's one of the mechanisms for providing us some information about the class. Grab lecture handouts if you didn't already, you two guys coming in. There's handouts on the table outside. There's some handouts on the table outside the lecture hall, so grab them before you come in and sit. See them? Okay. One other thing is that we will have two course ombuds. These are students, two of you, that will be another mechanism to get us feedback about this class and tell us how things are going. If you would like to volunteer to be one of the course ombuds people, please send me an email by tomorrow night, and I will announce the course ombuds on Wednesday. So we need two people to volunteer for that. If I get more than two people volunteering, I'll flip a coin or do something. But we do need your help in providing a mechanism for the students to provide input, you know, if it's going too fast or too slow, or, you know, the topics aren't lining up with your background, all of those things we need to know about. Related to your background, we have also handed out a course survey. There should be a one-sheet course survey. This is for the TAs and I to understand what courses you've taken, what background you have, if you have special interest in this class. Please fill that out and turn it in no later than Wednesday, and Wednesday by class, by end of class. And the reason is that we'll actually look at it. We have a TA meeting on Wednesday, and so we'll look through those and make sure that we've got a good sense of what the background of the class is, and we use that to tune a little bit about what we do. All right, so those are some of the other things associated with this class. Any questions on any of this stuff? No? Okay, just a couple more things administratively. One is that I am helped by a number of people. Oh, that came out really crummy. Me, you recognize the head TA for the class is Mary Dunlop. She's in the back. Stand up, Mary. That's Mary. So she's helping put everything together. You can always go to Mary and ask for, you know, how to do this, that, or the other, or something's not working right. We also have four other TAs, Melvin, Aliza, Laura, and Ling, at least three of whom are standing back there, maybe all of them. So TAs, stand up so we can all see you. So those are three of the four other TAs. Melvin is the guy who looks like this. And they're all coming from different backgrounds and different areas, and they will be doing all of the grading, leading the recitation sections, and handling office hours. So it's the collection of us that do all of this. One other mechanism that we use in this class is something called mud cards. So we're going to hand out some 3x5 cards. Those will come down the rows. These are blank cards. initially. And the idea is that as I'm lecturing, if there's something that didn't make sense, right, a muddy part of the lecture, then write down on the mud card, I didn't understand blank, or how do you do this, or could you give us more details on something or other. So anything that you've got a question about, or just at the end of the lecture before you're leaving, you start thinking, oh, geez, you know that thing we talked about a half hour ago, I meant to ask, but I forgot, right? Write it down on the mud card. We use, the TAs and I use the mud cards to understand how well the material's coming across, to answer questions that came up. What we will do is, you will turn in the mud cards at the end of class. There'll be a box in the front and back that looks like this. And so just throw your mud card in there. You can throw your homework assignments and other things in there too. Anything associated with the class. We'll then pull the mud cards out, and Mary will go through those. And sort out all the common questions, hand them off to the TAs. By 8 p.m. that evening, we'll have the responses to the mud card questions up there. So if you had a question in class, go back and look at the website at 8 p.m. or later, and you should see an answer up there. The other thing that you can do if you have a question outside of class, you're not in class, but you have a question, you can send email to the TAs. So cds101tas@cds.caltech.edu, it's on the syllabus. And if you send email to that and there's a common question that comes up, we'll post that up on the frequently asked questions list, which is where we post the responses to the mud cards. So we found these to be pretty effective in the past for answering questions, or if you just, you know, you're curious about something and you don't want to interrupt a class, that's a good way to get a little bit more information. As I mentioned already, we've got a fairly extensive website. It's a wiki. We keep it up to date with all of the things, so you'll find the course schedule, all of the handouts, anything that I hand out will be available there. So if you miss class or you miss a handout or we run out of handouts, you can always grab it there. A couple of special things. One is that we have a FAQ up there. That's where we post the responses to the mud cards and anything else that comes up. There is also a link up there to the wiki for the textbook. The wiki for the textbook has additional exercises, frequently asked questions from previous years that have come up that are associated with the book. So maybe, you know, here the question didn't come up, but, you know, as you're reading the chapter, something comes up, you can check on the book wiki, and it may be that somebody else has asked that question in the past. We will also take the frequently asked questions that you give us and the ones that are relevant to the book. So, you know, if it's something in the lecture where I scribbled something, you couldn't read it or something like that, we don't put those up, but other ones we'll actually transfer across to the book site for people in future years. Okay, so that's the administrative things associated with this class. What I want to do now is dive into what is the class actually about intellectually. Before I do that, any questions on administrative things? Homeworks, exam, collaboration policy? No? All right, so this class is about feedback. And so the very first thing that we should talk about is, what is feedback? So the dictionary definition of feedback, surprisingly enough, given that it's a technical term, is actually really close. So this is what the 1920 definition of feedback is: the return to the input of a part of the output of a machine, system, or process, as for producing changes in electronic circuits that improve performance or automatic control devices that provide self-corrective action. Exactly right. All right, what does that mean? Well, in figures, what it means is that we have two systems that are interconnected. So the outputs from system one affect as input system two, and the outputs from system two affect as input system one. And I'll give you lots of examples of these. But the basic idea is that feedback is some mutual interconnection of systems that affect each other. And because they're mutually interconnected, it can be tricky to reason about them. This is the problem that we have, for example, in ecosystems, where you make a change someplace and the environment responds in a way that you didn't know, and something unexpected it happens. That's the typical thing that you see in feedback systems, is that reasoning about, if I do this, what happens, gets tricky because there's a feedback interaction that changes the overall dynamics of the system. As we'll see hopefully today, and as you do the reading, feedback comes up all over the place. And so it's a topic that we see in all branches of science and engineering. And so it's something that you want to be able to think about and reason about. And the purpose of this class is to give you the tools to do that. I will slip into jargon pretty often. Ask me either on a mud card or just raise your hand if I say something, a term that I haven't defined. But one I'll define very early, because I'll do it, start using it quickly, is the notion of an open loop system versus a closed loop system. So if we have a feedback system, we'll often call that a closed loop system because there's a loop that's closed here in terms of the propagation of information around the systems. And occasionally, actually quite often as we get further in the term, it will be useful to break that interconnection and look at the open loop system, by which we mean the same two systems interconnected, but now without the feedback cycle coming back. So just one system driving another, or one system in isolation. So open loop and closed loop systems. Okay, so this is sort of the idea of what feedback is. It's the main topic of the class. And so I want to give you some examples of feedback systems coming from a number of different areas. One of them, which is an early one, and if you read a controls book, you always hear about the flyball governor. This dates back to the 1700s. And the idea was that in steam engines, which they were building back at the time, you had a problem. And the problem was that as you started the steam engine running, if you put a load on the steam engine, then the steam engine would slow down because there was a load on it. And that meant that if you were driving, for example, a bunch of machines or something off of that, that all of the machines would slow down as the loading increased. And if the speed, for example, of a spindle determined the quality of your product, you would start to have a problem. And so the idea in a flyball governor was to try and regulate that speed. Do the obvious thing. If the machine starts to slow down, I should apply more power to the machine so that the speed stays constant. And so the person who sort of came up with that idea was not Watt. So you often hear this called the Watt governor. It came up earlier. It had been used in many places. Watt had the idea of using this specifically on steam engines. So it's really accurately, the Watt governor is a governor for steam engines. He filed a patent on that. It was a major advance of the Industrial Revolution. This is a picture of a steam engine, and that thing right there is the flyball governor. It's sort of buried in the middle of it. The way that a flyball governor works is that you attach it to some part of the machine that's rotating, and here you can see that there's this little belt that comes up here from the main drive on this machine, and that spins a shaft, and as that shaft spins, you have two flyballs. As the shaft spins faster, those flyballs pop out. That popping out is connected to a mechanism that modulates what the steam going into the engine is, in the case of a steam engine. And so, for example, if it starts to spin faster, the balls pop out, it cuts down the amount of steam coming in, that slows down the engine. Similarly, if the engine starts to slow down, the balls come down because they're not spinning as fast, that increases the amount of steam going into the engine. And that's the mechanism by which you regulate the speed, and so it's a closed-loop feedback system. You have a steam engine, that's one piece. You have a flyball governor, that's the other, and the flyball governor affects the steam engine, the steam engine affects the flyball governor. Right? And so if you want to study the dynamics of this, you need to study it in a coupled system. If you go look at a steam engine from this vintage, anything up to about probably even the entire 1800s, you will see a flyball governor almost guaranteed. So in fact, I was at the London Museum of Science. I found this video later. This is one of the steam engines they have there. Watch for it. Right, there's you could tell this was not a controls engineer, right? If I had been taking this picture, I would have focused on the flywheel governor, you know, sort of lingered there for a while. This person's more interested in, I don't know what, the sign. I mean, this is all boring stuff. But nonetheless, next time you see a steam engine, look, and someplace on that, this is pretty much exactly this machine, right? There it is, right there. All right, and you see it sort of spinning around, and if the machine were spinning faster, those balls would fly up, right, and cause the machine to slow back down again and maintain a steady speed. One of the things about the flyball governor was that as it was getting put together, there were a lot of stability problems with it. That is, sometimes the idea was to maintain a constant speed, but sometimes it would speed up and slow down even when there wasn't a load attached to it. That's an instability, and that's one of the things we'll think about in this class. And of course, that's one of the classic things that you have to watch out for. So there's one example. There are lots of other examples of feedback around. We see them in biological systems. So, for example, maybe some of you, like me, are sweating a little bit because this room is not particularly cool. And so that's a feedback mechanism in your body, right, which is saying, hey, it's a little bit hot. I'm going to sweat a little bit. That'll cool me down. So homeostasis, generally the regulation of different chemical levels, temperatures, and other things in your body. If you dig down, this is an example of something that's a schematic, biological schematic diagram for cancer. So cancer is an example of something that in order to understand it, you need to understand biomolecular regulatory networks, the things that regulate cell growth, which is what goes wrong in cancer. That's a feedback system that's regulating that, and cancer actually disrupts that feedback system and leads to cancer. In environmental systems, as I've already mentioned, ecosystems generally, whether those are large-scale ecosystems or small-scale ecosystems, those of you who know, for example, Jared Ledbetter here at Caltech studies the ecosystem inside of a termite gut. And so that's a particularly interesting ecosystem for Jared, maybe not for the rest of us. But nonetheless, there's tons of feedback interaction between all of the different entities that are living inside of a termite's guts or our guts or in the grass or all of those different things. Another example in environmental systems, the global carbon cycle. That's one that, of course, we're hearing a lot about these days, and one where we are starting to affect that particular feedback system, and the Earth's regulatory system is not necessarily able to cope with what the human population is able to do. Different extreme is looking at financial systems. The stock market is an example of a feedback system. As I buy stocks, prices go up. People react to those prices. They buy or sell their stock. That affects the prices. So there's an example of a complex system. Service and supply chains. As I run low on something and I order more, there's a feedback interaction that goes on. So all over the place we see these feedback systems coming up. And we want to understand how they work. So a big part of the class and kind of the focus, the initial focus is on what's a feedback system, how do we study a feedback system, how do we reason about these interconnected systems. Related to feedback systems are control systems. A control system is one in which we design a feedback system for some purpose. And so when we talk about control in this class, we will usually talk about the combination of sensing, computation, actuation in a feedback loop with a physical system. So for example, if we have a vehicle whose speed we would like to regulate, then we can sense what the vehicle's speed is. Think about looking at the speedometer. We can then say, I'm going too slow or too fast. Based on that, we compute what we'd like to do. That's called the control law or control algorithm. And that computation is then sent to an actuator that affects the system. And so here we have now four systems in closed loop. We have the vehicle itself, which has some dynamics. We have the sensing system, which may also have some dynamics in terms of how that system determines what, in this case, the vehicle speed is. We have a computation, and then we have an actuation system. And so when we talk about control, we want to look at a feedback system where we get to design part of it, and depending on where you come into the cycle, sometimes you get to design the sensing, computation, and actuation system. Sometimes these are fixed, and you only get to design the control law that couples these together. And the types of things that we want to look at as control system engineers are stability. Do we maintain a desired operating point? If I tell the car to go at 65 miles an hour and I get some wind gusts, or I start to go up a hill, or the car's 10 years old versus the day when I bought it, does it maintain that speed, and does it do so in a stable fashion? And in particular, right, does it do better than that friend of yours who's constantly surging back and forth a little bit on the speed and making you sick? So that's an unstable system, right, versus somebody like a typical modern electronic cruise controller that just holds it dead on to the speed that you want to go. We can also talk about performance separate from holding that steady speed. If I command a change, does it do so in a rapid and high performance fashion? So if I say go from 55 to 65, do I quickly come up to that speed? Do I not overshoot and go too fast and then slow down? Right? What's the performance of that as I go through? And then lastly, the robustness of the system. That is, to what extent is the stability and performance tolerant of changes in the system? If I have four people in the car instead of one person in the car, if my tires are a little bit low, if I'm driving on dirt versus driving on pavement, wet versus dry, if I'm looking at something like a cruise control system, then we'd like that. It's not something where it works great as long as you're on pavement, but as soon as you get on a dirt road, it goes nuts. Right? We want to be robust with respect to whatever the environment that it's running in is. So, the goals that we'll look at in this class as we start looking at design of feedback systems or design of control systems is stability, performance, and robustness. And we'll start the class looking at stability, then we'll start talking more and more about performance, and then toward the very end of the class, we'll start to talk about robustness of feedback systems. Okay? So an example of a feedback system is this particular feedback system. This is Bob. This was our entry in the 2004 DARPA Grand Challenge. This was built by CDS 110 and other students. So this was built by undergraduates, many of whom were sitting in this class. And here what Bob is doing is driving itself. So there's no driver. This is an autonomous vehicle, and it's driving itself out into the desert, maintaining the speed, looking at how fast am I going versus how fast do I want to go, pressing the gas pedal to modulate all of that, as well as doing the steering system. That is, that as it starts to move around, it says, says, I need to turn a little bit more left here, or I need to turn a little bit more right. You can see that this particular feedback system doesn't necessarily have exactly the performance we'd want. For example, right now, it's not really detecting that there is a concrete barrier in front of it. It actually drives up on that barrier a little bit before it keeps going. So, you know, it's probably get like a C in a controls design class right there. It's just kind of up on the barrier. But it's a complicated system, and so there are lots of things to think about in terms of how do you get that to work. So when we talk about control, we talk very much about the design of that system. The sensing here was GPS and inertial measurement units on the roof. The actuation was that we could push the gas pedal and the brake. And the control law was how much should I push the gas pedal or brake as a function of how fast I'm going and how fast I want to go, or how much should I turn the steering or the various other things that went on. So that's then an example of one of these control systems that links around. And in control, there are two main principles, and these are generally principles of feedback systems, and we very much exploit them in control. So the two main principles of feedback are, one, feedback gives you robustness to uncertainty. That is, if you don't know everything about the system, by measuring what actually happens and then changing what you do based on what you see, you can get robustness to those unknown things. Right? So that's the idea of robustness. So feedback in particular can allow high performance in the presence of rather large uncertainty. For example, if you look at an electrical circuit, for example, the type of thing that might be in an MP3 player, your iPod, or in your stereo system, the individual components, the transistors, for example, that make up an electronic amplifier, can often vary in their raw gain by a factor of 5. That is, go to the EE stock room, pick up 2 transistors, right? This one will amplify the signal by 200, this one will amplify it by 1,000, right? So a factor of 5 difference in amplification. And yet, if you go buy your iPod, right, you take 2 iPods, set them right next to each other, dial the volume up to the same level, almost indistinguishable the differences between those, right? Very, very, very repeatable. How do you do that? Well, you measure what the actual output is to the earphones, and if it's too low, you crank up the currents internally, right, to do that. So it's a mechanism by which you can get robustness to component variations, in this case, transistor gains, to get robustness to that and provide good performance. And again, the key idea here is that by sensing what actually happens versus what's desired, then computing a change to the actuation, you do that. So that's the first principle of feedback, robustness to uncertainty. The second thing that we do with feedback is we use it to design dynamics. That is, we don't have to take the natural dynamics of the system we're given and say, well, that's what you have to live with. We can actually change those dynamics by redesigning the system through feedback. I like to use as my example of that the X-29. This is a forward swept wing aircraft, right? The wings are this way. So if you have ever stood up in a car or put your arm out the window of a car, right, you know that if your arm's pointing forward, right, and you lift it up a little bit, what happens, right? The wind catches it and it blows it over like this, right? Very unstable. A small change suddenly, right, leads to a very large change. So you can imagine that this particular system probably doesn't fly so well, right, on its own. But what we do, in fact, is that we use feedback to sense those small changes in this case, the pitch of the aircraft, and essentially modulate using these canards what, and other actuators that are on this, what the aerodynamic forces are in the airplane to allow it to fly in a stable fashion. So in this particular system, if the feedback weren't there, the pilot would simply have to eject. There's no way. The dynamics are much, much, much too fast for a pilot to control this. And so we're able to change the dynamics of an unstable system in this case into a stable system. But there are limits to what we can do. And so one of the things that we talk about in the context of this class are, what are the fundamental limits to how good you can do? Can you make this set of dynamics look like anything? It's a vehicle, it has certain constraints, or are there limits to what you can do? So we can make stable go to unstable, we can't unstable go to stable, we can't necessarily modify it completely to do what we want. And again, we think about the limits of that. Question in the back. So in this particular case, one of the benefits of doing a sort of open loop unstable design, right, is high performance. That is that you're getting a lot of actuator authority. So suppose you want to turn very quickly, right? If you can control it, right, you're going to get huge amounts of forces just by deflecting a little bit. So often you see that, and one of the things I'll tell you as we get later in the class is, boy, you need to be really certain that you want that extra performance because an unstable system has several performance limits that are going to limit your robustness to uncertainty, right? So they're going to couple together. But usually, for most of the things you do, you make it stable, and then try and get the dynamics to just have higher performance. But sometimes you'll start unstable to get that performance. Okay? All right, so in the context now of thinking about control systems. Let's look in a little bit more detail at this cruise control or speed control example. And this is sort of the type of thing that we'll do in this class. This example, of course, we'll use many times because people are familiar with it. But suppose you have Bob here, our vehicle that we raced in the Dark Green Challenge, and I want to control its speed. Well, I can write down a differential equation for that speed that's basically F equals ma, right? So here's the mass times the time derivative of the velocity, so v dot is the acceleration, so that's ma, is equal to the forces applied to the system. And the forces applied here are the engine forces, that's my actuator. There may be damping due to the wheels or aerodynamic drag, and it may have some forces that come from the hill. If I'm going up a hill, sometimes that's zero, sometimes it's not zero. Could be positive, negative, depending on whether I'm going uphill or downhill. And my control law in this particular case is going to be that I'm going to set the engine force to be proportional with some constant proportionality k to the difference between the desired speed and the actual speed. And so if I'm going too slow, I'm going to push the engine to make me go a little bit faster. If I'm going too fast, I'm going to back off on the engine so I can go a little bit slower. And so if I have a differential equation written down like this, I can solve that differential equation and look at what the solutions look like and then use that to study the system. And so in particular, if I write down the solution to that differential equation, if I change the desired speed from, say, 55 miles an hour to 65 miles an hour, I might get a response that looks something like this, this curve. So it starts to go up. It starts at the initial speed. It goes up, gets close to 65. Maybe it gets to 64. And I can look at what this steady state speed, that is the kind of constant that I finally get to, as a function of all of the parameters in here. And this is the equation for that. We'll learn to derive this later. But the steady state speed is k over b plus k times the desired speed plus 1 over b plus k times the force due to the hill. Sorry, this should be F hill, not U hill. And if you look at this for a little bit, you see a couple of properties of the feedback system. One is that if k is large, so what's k? K is the gain of the system, and we'll define these more formally, but think of this as if I've got a small difference in speed, how much engine force do I apply? If k is very large, even a small difference, I'll apply a fairly large amount of force. If k is very small, it takes a large difference in speed before I apply that same force. And we see that if I ignore the hill term here, that the speed of the vehicle, if k is large, goes to 1. So think of b, suppose b was 100, and suppose k was 1,000,000. Right? Then 1,000,000 over 1,000,000 plus 100 is 0.9999, right? So it's very, very close to 1. Suppose that B, my car gets older, I get a little bit more drag, right? It's the term that's the damping. Suppose that B goes up to 200. Suppose it goes up to 500. Suppose it goes up to 1,000. 1,000,000 over 1,000,000 plus 1,000 is still 0.999, right? Very close to 1. And so we see that if K is large, that in fact we get robustness with respect to the damping that's here. If we look at the disturbances, that is the effect of going up a hill, that's going to apply some gravitational force to us. And again, we see here that large gain does a good thing, namely 1 over b plus k, if k is very large, goes to 0. So 1 over 1,000,000 plus 100 or 1,000,000 plus 1,000, right, is basically 0, right, 0.0001. And so in this particular system, we see that the performance of the system goes up as k gets large. That is, as k is big, then we get very close to the desired frequency, even if the parameters of the system, the damping are not very well known or change, or the disturbances coming into the system do that. And we see, in fact, that the system is quite robust, at least in this model, with respect to that. Notice, for example, that it doesn't actually depend on what the mass of the system is or what the desired gain is or what B is, right? As long as K is very large compared to B, the things that I said are true. That is, we get very good tracking. Independent of the details of whether K is 1 million or 2 million, not going to matter very much. B is 100 or 1,000, not going to matter much. As long as K is much bigger than B. All right? So that's an example of robustness with respect to these particular perturbations. So this type of thing is what happens in control systems all the time. It's what allows us to fly airplanes. It's what allows all of the electronics that we use to work. It comes up in a number of different types of systems. Okay. Lost a picture. Is this picture lost in your guys' thing too? That picture? All right, that's that fly. So this is an example of an insect flight control system. What you saw the fly do was jump out of that tube. As it jumps out, it has to catch itself and begin flying. So the missing picture here is a picture of that fly. So imagine that sitting over here. And we can ask, all right, this is a control system. It happens to be a biological control system designed by evolution, but nonetheless should have these same properties. So we can ask, for example, what's the sensing system? What's the actuation system? What's the computation? In the case of a fly, there are a couple of different sensing systems. One is you have the eyes, the compound eyes that we see on the front of a fly. That's one input that the fly sees. As the fly is falling around, its optical field is changing. You also see on flies that they have some vestigial wings that are effectively act as gyroscopes, so as it's tipping around, it can actually sense that velocity. The actuation system are the big power muscles on the wings, the things that make the wings beat, but they're also smaller, specialized muscles that allow the two wings to beat slightly differently. And so that allows us to get differential forces and other things. And the computation in this case is the fly's brain. Has about 500,000 neurons in it, less computational power than what's in PDA, an iPod, any of those things. And yet, it's able to do these amazing things. So this is an example of a control system, in this case a biological control system, with sensing, actuation, and computation. So there's some examples of feedback systems and control systems. And again, the distinction is that we normally think of control systems as systems where we're designing the feedback as opposed to just analyzing it. Now, one of the things that is nice about control systems and feedback in general is that there are lots of tools available to look at these systems. And in particular, these are the tools that we're going to learn about in this class. There are modeling tools that allow us to represent the dynamics of a system, the input-output properties of a system. There are tools that allow us to identify what those dynamics are from data, so we can go take data and look at those data and figure out, here's what the dynamics of the system are. And there are theories that allow us to take complicated descriptions of systems and produce simpler descriptions of systems that capture the essential dynamics of what's going on, so that we're not caught up in having to deal with very complicated models. Because of the robustness properties of feedback, we can often get away with very simple models. There are also many analysis tools. So once I have a model, and the very first thing we'll talk about in this class starting next week is modeling of systems. Once I have that model, I can analyze the system. We can talk about, is the system stable? We can talk about, is it robust? And we can define explicitly what those mean, and so we'll do that. We can also talk about the performance of input-output systems, right? Disturbance, rejection, parametric robustness, things like that. And so there are tools to do that. And finally, in the context of control systems, there are tools to synthesize controllers, that is to design control laws given a system. So these are constructive tools. And what we'll do in the class is design these things. And if you take the optional course project, we will implement these things and sort of show what it takes to get a control system to be designed. And there are lots of tools for constructing not only control laws, but also estimators and filters. This is mainly a topic from CDS 110B as opposed to CDS 110. 10A, but we'll go through some of the design tools for feedback systems in this course. The other thing that's true about control systems is that all of these different theoretical things that we're going to learn about have been implemented as computational tools that you can use. And so, for example, in MATLAB, these are some of the toolboxes that exist that allow you to apply the various theories here. So the very standard thing that's going to happen is that I'm going to say, here's this technique, and here's the command in MATLAB that implements it. All right? And pretty much every technique that we're going to learn has a command in MATLAB that does the computation behind that. Of course, you still need to know what you're doing in order to apply that command, but the grunge of actually calculating out the numbers and all those things has been taken care of. And this is just a small sampling of some of the tools that are available. They apply to a number of different areas of science and engineering. And for the most part, if you've got a model that is in a form that these things can work with, then you can do the analysis and synthesis, and there are modeling tools to help you put the models in that framework. And you'll get some experience, even on the first homework set, with MATLAB and the various tools that go along with them. Okay, so that's sort of an overview and a little bit of motivation for the class. What are we actually going to do in the class? So, the first week, today's lecture, Wednesday's lecture, will just mainly be spent on introductory concepts. On Friday, there will be a MATLAB tutorial that Aliza, one of the TAs, will give. If you have used MATLAB before in another class and you're pretty good at it, it's okay probably to miss it. If you've never used MATLAB before, you absolutely need to come on Friday or pick up the notes afterwards. We make very heavy use of MATLAB. One of the consistent pieces of feedback that we're trying to respond to is that what takes time in the class is getting stuff to work in MATLAB. So in some of the future lectures where I'm doing things. I'll actually give you the code that I use to generate the plots you see in the lecture so that you can look at that and see how did he get that to work inside of MATLAB. We will put up pieces and facts and other things to help you do that. But if you've never used MATLAB before, please try and come on Friday. Please try and get MATLAB installed on your machine before Friday or running in the lab, whatever you use for your computing, so that you can make use of it. The second week, we'll talk about system modeling. How do you model a system from a controls point of view, and how do you understand what's important for modeling for looking at feedback systems? And then we'll start going into some of the tools looking at stability and performance of feedback systems. And then we'll do what's typically called state space control theory. We'll look at a particular representation of models and some of the tools for doing things, and then we'll move into what's typically referred to as frequency domain control theory. So if you've taken a previous controls course someplace, you probably did these in opposite order, but in fact, for a lot of the systems we look at, this is a much more useful order. So we'll start in state space, then move to frequency domain. On Friday, generally the lecture will, so we'll do a Monday lecture, typically a kind of higher level overview with the principles and some of the tools. On Wednesday, we'll dive into the details for the CDS 110 students, and then on Friday we'll usually come back and sort of polish off pieces that we're missing, give more detail that's appropriate for both 101 and 110. There are a couple of topics where the Friday topic is rather advanced. I've marked them here, and so if you're a CDS 101 student, you don't need to come to those two Friday lectures. We'll also use the first two Friday lectures to give tutorials and reviews of things, and so the first two Friday lectures will be given by the TAs. And we'll also use the Friday lecture at midterm week and the last week of class for reviews of the material that you're expected to know for the midterm and final. So generally, you should plan on coming on Friday. If you're in CDS 101, then on the third week of class and on the seventh week of class, and I'll remind you of this when we get there, you don't need to come to the Friday lecture. Okay, so that's sort of the things that we're going to cover in the class. Any questions on this material, this start? And all of this is talked about in more detail in the textbook in Chapter 1. Okay, so to summarize, we've talked about the idea of a feedback system, and in particular the idea of a control system being sensing, computation, and actuation in a feedback loop. We've talked about these two primary principles that we'll see throughout the course of getting using feedback to get robustness to uncertainty and to design the dynamics. And I've given you some different examples of feedback systems from a number of different disciplines. What we will do next is, first, you have a homework set. It's due not on 10-6, sorry. It's due on 10-2, the 2nd of October. It's written correctly. So next Monday. What we ask you to do there is to look at some different examples of control systems and to work through a couple of problems. And in fact, we didn't do the Steadicam example, but we did insect flight vision as our example this year. And so you will see on the homework set, if you look at it, if you're in CDS 101, you need to do the first two problems on the homework set only. If you're in CDS 110, you need to do all of the problems on the homework set. And that will be typical. It'll typically be four problems. CDS 101, first two. CDS 110, all four. On Wednesday, I'll give a little bit more detailed introduction to control applications and some of the engineering details about how you implement this, and a short review of some topics in linear algebra that we'll need. And I will talk about the optional course project on Wednesday, and then on Friday we'll have the MATLAB tutorial. And then next week we'll dive into system modeling and talking what all of that's about. Okay? Any other questions on anything I covered? Please remember, if you have questions that didn't come up or something you're confused about or went too fast, please use the mud cards to ask those questions, and we will get them done by tonight. Thank you.